Hello, and welcome to The Purpose. I'm Bill Brunson.
I'm John Sweeney.
I'm Kip McClure.
And I'm Scott Barnes.
And today we're going to be continuing our look at how we are influencers in the world for Christ, how we make a difference for Christ each and every day, as well, just simply by living faithfully as followers of Jesus and sharing our faith in what we do, how we live. And so we're going to be doing that today from the book of Romans, looking at Romans 12. And I'm going to read verses 1 and 2, though we'll talk about all of Romans 12 probably, but we'll read 1 and 2 because it sort of sets the stage for all that follows. The Apostle Paul is writing to the church in Rome and says, "Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will." We remember that the Apostle Paul is writing this letter to the church in Rome before he has ever been to Rome. The church in Rome had begun probably about two decades prior to Paul's arrival, when the Jews began leaving because of Roman persecution in Israel. Jews began leaving Israel and going to different parts of the Roman Empire. Many went to Rome, and that meant Christians went to Rome, people who had found that their life in Christ. It's believed that the Apostle Peter had traveled to Rome in the early, around 50 AD, and remained there for a couple of years, and then the Emperor Cassius drove people out of Rome, drove Christians and Jews out of Rome, and so Peter fled at that time along with the others. But the others, the church had, well, like the church always does, the church had continued in Rome underground with the Jews that had remained in the city. And so eventually, in 60 AD, Paul is going to go to Rome. He's been arrested in Jerusalem. He has been held for 2 years in house arrest in Caesarea by the Sea. And he has made his appeal to Caesar as a Roman citizen so that he would, as he deemed it, would receive a fair trial. And so in 60 AD, he is transported to Rome and to stand trial. But before he goes, he sends this letter. He sends the letter to, well, help the church there that has been struggling but growing, and trying to inform them of what it means to be a Christian. How do you live the faith that we are called to live? And so we get this part that is in the 12th chapter that's very straightforward. He tells us, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Don't conform, but instead be transformed. And that's the heart of what we're looking at as we are called to be influencers for Christ in the world. We are called to be transformed by Christ and not conform to the world around us, but instead to help the world around us to transform as well. So, as you think about that idea of how do you not conform, and how do you transform, and what does this look like to be influencers? What does that say to you?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting, the use of our use of the word influencers has really intrigued me. One of the images that we talked about in our 9:45 service last week was this idea of the creation of the social media influencer. This person, or these people who seem to be genuine and authentic, but in fact they are simply being paid by companies to hawk product. And their role as influencers is to get you to conform. The understanding, the global understanding of an influencer is to become a conformist, to do what everybody else is doing because it's the right thing to do. It's the best thing to do. It's the cool thing to do. This protein shake tastes better than anybody else's. And yet here we are, kind of embracing this idea of being influencers in the world, and our second week in, the real call that Paul puts on us is to be a nonconformist and to influence others to be nonconformist. It sounds almost oxymoronic, but it's actually exactly what Paul is telling us to do. We do have tremendous influence in this world, not only as Christians, but as those who believe in something far greater than who we are. People look to those, you know, they whether they look to us as clergy or they look to us as full believers, they're looking for something in us that has the ability for us to become tremendous influencers of who God calls us to be, and that is to not be of this world. I'm getting a tremendous amount of really good energy from this idea of being a nonconformist influencer. So,
yeah, I mean, all that being said, this episode of The Purpose is brought to you by Shady Rays. So if you'd like to go there, promo code PURPOSE, 15% off the first order. Just kidding. But I think you're right. I also think it's interesting, like, how he starts this section by saying, all right, you're supposed to live as your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing or holy and acceptable to God, which sort of like points back to kind of that Old Testament language about like the sacrifices that people were supposed to make, which are generally, you know, obviously animals or grain offerings, and those sacrifices were supposed to be pleasing and holy and acceptable to God. And now Paul's saying that our lives are that holy sacrifice that's meant to be pleasing to God. And that's an interesting connection that you can make in reminding us about what this is supposed to look like. Our life is supposed to be in sacrificial service to God. And then fortunately, and you know, one thing, you know, Paul says a lot of stuff that's a little bit hard sometimes for us to pull off in our lives, but one thing I do like about it, it's very straightforward. There's no mincing of words with this. He's not telling stories that we have to sit there for the next 200, 300 years trying to figure out what he's talking about. He says that your lives are supposed to be a holy and living sacrifice to God, and this is what it looks like. This is how you act in community, and this is how you act through Christ in the world, and this is how it's different than everything else. And so you're right, that is kind of the big marked difference between how we are supposed to live and sort of how society pushes us to live, is we're not supposed to be like everything else. So what the world tells us to be, we're almost supposed to be the opposite. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to not live with hate. We're supposed to love our enemies. Mm. We're supposed to not condemn people. I think that is what is so, especially now in the world we live in with media, social media, all this other stuff, I think this is more timely now, but it also makes it a bit harder because we're surrounded by all these things that are pulling us in certain directions, and Scripture beckons us back to this sort of reality about being sort of that beacon of hope, that peculiar people,
yeah,
that just looks different than everybody else.
You know, we talk often about the phenomenon of kind of the Sunday Christian and then the Monday returning into the world, and that's really what this is calling us against, to be in this world, not of it. That it's not just a one day a week experience. It is a life, setting ourselves apart, living differently, is the difficulty that Paul's putting before us.
Yeah, I've always liked the story that a young kid returns from summer camp. It was at a Christian camp, and he comes home and he tells his mother. His parents had picked him up. They had been there for the closing ceremony of the camp week, you know, and all that camp experience. And they get him home, and they're talking to him about how the week went. And he said, it was great. He said, on Monday, I accepted Jesus in my heart. And he said that was, it was really, really, that was really amazing. And she said, you know, well, what did your counselor say? Nothing. Well, what did your friends say in your bunks? Nothing. Well, why not? He said, I don't think they ever found out. and you know, he kept it to himself. Well, you know, there, Paul is saying we can't keep it to ourselves because we are supposed to be transformed by our experience, our life with Christ. And, but think about that in today's world. I was recently reading an article about non-scripted reality television and the crisis that social media has made for that sort of genre of TV that came out, you know, now what, a decade and a half ago, it sort of started. And well, even though they still call some of the shows non-scripted, they do put them in scenarios that they then have to deal with, whatever. They said, we are now reaching a point where we don't get any semblance of reality because as they are on there, the people are no longer being themselves. They are being what social media will approve of because they don't want the backlash from social media for them, for their families. They don't want to be canceled. And so... They are conforming to what they think social media is going to say, what culture is saying is appropriate. And so you don't get reality from them anymore. I'm afraid, you know, if the Apostle Paul, obviously in like 59 AD, was already seeing the problem that, you know, we can tend to conform to the world around us, and you don't get the reality of what Christianity is supposed to look like because we don't want to stick out. We don't want people to think that we're the weird one at work, or the weird family in the restaurant that prays before their meal, or that we don't let our kids do something, watch something, go somewhere because we don't know that that's the best thing for, you know, for us to do. We don't want to be that person. So we live in a world that is basically demanding we conform to it. And I think the challenge that Paul sets before us may be harder now than ever.
You know, it's interesting to look at the life of Paul and how he chose to be this nonconformist from the time that he met Christ all the way through. He was never really accepted by the folks in Jerusalem, so he struggled as even that way as a nonconformist. But in whatever town he would go to, and he would go to the marketplace, he would go to the synagogue to start this dialogue, knowing that it was not going to be kosher with the people in that town. And one of my favorite stories is when he went to Athens, which is the heart of, I mean, this is where Socrates and Plato, where they debated, and he went to the Areopagus where those folks debated and where all kind of debates happened. And the Areopagus, as you stand on the hill and look around Athens, on every hilltop there's another temple to another god. And it would have been easy for Paul to just want to come in and get all those folks to like him, you know, to fit in with all those. I went to see the Greek philosophers, and we taught Greek philosophy. But instead of that, he goes in and he talks to them about this resurrected Christ, which they absolutely drew the line and said, this is insanity. We're not even going to talk about this. But he felt compelled that he was not going to be, he was not going to blend into that culture, but rather he was going to use that culture as a means of highlighting who Jesus is. And so, and the difference that Jesus is. So I think there is a sense that Paul demonstrates we're going to look a little strange. We're not always going to be accepted because the words that we use, the way that we believe is going to be odd to other people, but it's okay. We don't have to conform, and being a nonconformist is perfectly fine.
You know, Bill, you mentioned a good point about this idea of using the reality TV stars as trying to kind of hide their own reality, the irony of that. The truth is, the world, it's impossible to kind of define how to conform to the world, because it's so fickle and it changes on every whim that there's no way to ever truly understand and truly conform to what the world calls us to do, because it's ever changing. But the truth that Paul puts forward to us about what it means to be a non-conforming Christian in this world, he spells it out in verse 9. Let love be genuine. Hate what is evil. Hold on to what is good. The simplicity of loving one another. And outdo each other with showing signs of affection. Like, that's apparently, even in Paul's time, was so unconventional that it was seen as being nonconformist to the world by hating what is evil, by outdoing one another with signs of affection. Well, that sounds like a pretty great world to live in, and I would be happily conforming to that world. But in this world, that calls us to be nonconformist. And Paul spells it out, you know, centuries ago, and here we are facing those same types of challenges in this world. It is not culturally acceptable to outdo each other with signs of affection. It is culturally acceptable to love hate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if you're there's nothing that gets people going more than a good social media rant. Mm-hmm. If you have someone that posts on social media something really positive and happy and good and talking about something that is faithful, you get like a smattering of likes and maybe one person saying amen. But then if you go off on the person that cut you off in traffic, or the fact that somebody flipped around an iPad at you and you had to tip someone that you usually don't tip, I mean, it starts a rant that will go on, and the number of comments will hit triple digits.
Or the current state of the repaving of Dolly Ridge.
Oh, yes, the current state. Or the fact that they've closed Massey for 6 months. Anything like that. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. People, if you can get it in a negative tone, then everyone jumps on board. That's just the way our world, unfortunately, is working. So while it's more challenging to be a nonconformist in today's world, it's probably fairly easy to be a nonconformist, because all you have to do is make one small change and be positive, show love, not rant, and suddenly you're a nonconformist.
Yeah, well, I mean, even at the end of this chapter, because, I mean, look, we live in a world, you're right, you look on Facebook, whether it's about politics specifically, those are always, anytime you're scrolling through and see someone's made a long-winded defense or about any kind of political figure, you know that the comments are going to be spicy. Because we live in a world that's almost fueled by hate now. Right? You can't just disagree with this. You have to hate it. You have to want it dead. And at the end of Romans 12, he literally says, to the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Like, what a completely contrarian thought that is at this point. The idea of you don't repay evil with evil, you repay evil with good. You don't want your enemy to burn. You want your enemy to be fed and be and experience the same freedoms that you have. That's a wild thing.
And goodness is seen as a weakness.
Yes.
And it's infuriating.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and over time, the whole, if your enemy is hungry, feed them. If they're, you know, all of that, they, over time, it's been a struggle. I remember in when 9/11 happened, where I was at in ministry, of like most places, held prayer vigils and gathered in prayer. And one of the laity of the church, who was a professor at a college nearby, and got up and offered one of the prayers, and it was beautiful and truly sincere, and it was thought-provoking, soul-stirring. And then in the prayer, offered prayer for those that had, you know, those that had inflicted the act of terror, their families, etc. And it was a very quick turn that happened after that. And that person received amazing backlash from it. And while nowadays it's easier to do backlash because it's you do it online and hiding behind your keyboard. In that period of time, it required email and phone calls and visits. But this person received all of those because of feeling that that was an atrocity to have prayed for the enemy. But it really feels a little bit like that's biblical. But we still live in that world where vengeance is encouraged. Mm-hmm. Praying for enemies is, are you crazy?
Mm-hmm. I love the part, I think it's verse 3. And he repeats it further down in the chapter. He says, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought. And you think about the social influencers that influence our world. They think of themselves fairly highly. And so it's hard to think of a social influencer who is a nice, humble person. It kind of goes contrary to who we are in culture. But that humility is what Christ calls us to. And so it's a different kind of influencing. It's an influencing that doesn't shout out, but it's an influence that does its work quietly in the background.
Well, I mean, I think that sort of a good test of where your soul is Christian. And you see this in different areas of Christianity. Is if you get excited or are hoping that certain individuals or groups of people are in or end up in hell, then maybe look inward a little bit and read this again, because that is something that I've, in my years of like working in ministry, been interested. Like, not only do we hope this place exists, but we hope that it's like filled with people we don't like. Mm-hmm. And that's a really, really kind of good sign that perhaps we're missing the entire part of Scripture and the gospel and what this is.
Yeah, the idea of being the nonconformist in this world will be a challenge, because the world's going to push back fairly hard. And we might actually provoke a rant by someone by being nonconformist. But that probably means that we're doing right. Someone, maybe Jesus, that talked about that, you know, you'll be blessed when they revile and persecute you for my name's sake. Mm-hmm. Who knew that loving in today's world, being grace-filled, those kind of things would be what would probably get us reviled and persecuted. But that's sort of the direction we've gone.
Yeah, I mean, I always just sort of point out And look, obviously, you know, praying this doesn't happen to us for just loving people, but, you know, all these disciples, all these people that are going out, Paul himself, most of them all die pretty horrendous ways for this. And for being about as nonconformist as you could possibly get. And while I don't think that's our destiny here, sitting around this table, that'd be kind of a bummer if it was.
We're not praying for that.
We're not praying for that, but I do think that is sort of the whole point of this. When you are bumping up against the realities of where you're being pulled to, and you want to be kind of the rod that stands there's like, no, we're going this direction. And unfortunately, there's consequences to that that may be uncomfortable, but it's about understanding sort of who we belong to and why this matters.
And, you know, Scott, I agree wholeheartedly. And I think, unfortunately, for especially our younger generations who have become so ingrained in social media, to become a nonconformist in that and to live a life that we are called to live could feel like death.
Yeah.
Like it is, you are so ostracized and cast out, and the struggle to remain popular and important and to go against that could feel like the death that these disciples felt, unfortunately.
Yeah, just remember when Paul is writing this, he is more than likely in prison in Caesarea by the Sea in Israel, awaiting his transport. He was held there for 2 years because there was a Roman governor shift. And so the second governor ends up being the one who has him transported to Rome. And he, of course, there's all kind of trouble getting him to Rome, but he finally gets there and he's arrested there. So he's writing this letter about being a nonconformist and about how you're supposed to be, you know, constantly living your witness and always trying to be as faithful as you can be in all aspects of life. And he's doing it from prison where he is being, you know, he's in prison because of living his faith. Mm-hmm. And then he gets to Rome. There's no thought that he ever fully worships with the Roman church because he arrives in Rome under arrest, and he's never a free man in Rome. He's under house arrest and he's held in prison during his time in Rome. And so there's never a point where he gets to go and do whatever he wants to do, go and meet with them to worship. And we know in 64 AD, he's beheaded. Around 62 AD, Peter arrived back in Rome, and because the church was continuing to grow. But Nero is in power by that point. Cassius had been the one that challenged Peter the last time he was there. This time, Nero is there, and Nero is the one who is the emperor when Paul is killed, beheaded, and then 3 years later, 2 to 3 years later, is when Peter is crucified upside down in Rome as part of persecution. And so these are two people who, they were absolutely nonconformist, but there was a price that they paid for it. And as Scott said, the price we pay for it is going to be nothing compared mm-hmm. to what they experienced. But here's the reality. Their life of faithfulness, their nonconformist spirit, has us still talking about Peter and Paul and reading Paul's letter 2,000 years later, and almost 2,000 years later, because of how much of an impact they made. Imagine the impact that we could make, that you could make, if you chose to live a life of faith and a life that is not conformed to the world around you, but instead you are constantly seeking to be transformed by the God you serve. So this gives you a lot to think about. Read Romans chapter 12 and think about what that would look like in your life if you live that, just that chapter alone out in your day-to-day life. If you were a nonconformist, What would that do? What would that do for you? And what difference could you make in our world? We hope you'll join us again on The Purpose.